the Giant Sports Show on the Voice of the Valley, AM 1450 KBMW. Brought to you by Giant Sunflower Seeds. Giant Seeds. Go big. And now, from the KBMW studios, here's KBMW Sports Director Andrew Zimmel.
Good morning, November 20th. We got the calendar right this week. It's Andrew Zimmel with you on the Giant Sports Show. We have a jam-packed show for you today, talking a little bit of Bisons, Breckenridge Cowgirl Volleyball, and of course, we're going to talk about NDSCS Wildcats with the athletic director for the Wildcats. How you doing, Coach?
Good morning. Great to be here.
It is great to be here. We do want to start with, we were going to talk about volleyball and football just very quickly before we get into your men's basketball team.
Yeah, the Wildcat volleyball team concluded their season yesterday at the national tournament, winning the first and losing the second, so they're probably on their way home here this morning if they didn't return late last night, but another stellar season. Coach Pace has been here a long time, does a terrific job. I think this is their fourth trip to the national tournament, so accolades to those young ladies. They did a great job. Our football team, another tremendous season, undefeated in the regular season at 8-0, and the playoffs, won the first round, got upset the second round, unfortunately, but Coach Isendorf was the conference MCAC Coach of the Year, and they finished the season 9-1, and you know what? I would take that for our Minnesota Vikings right now.
No kidding. Well, you got to be the higher seed, and you got to have a pretty good season to be upset. So it's like, you know, I'm always looking for the silver linings. Big Mike can attest to that. I'm always looking for the silver linings around here, trying to find a way to, you know, make losses into wins.
You know, one thing I've always said about our program, and one example of this is Miles City's coming in here and playing our women at 2 o'clock today, and they won the conference and won the region last year, actually had the National Player of the Year, and they came to the preseason tournament, went 0-3. Our programs are all sustainable. We might not win the championship every year, although we'd like to, but if we're not winning it, we're always in the hunt.
See, and that's nice, too. I wish our Vikings were like that, too, Stu.
That's right.
Let's talk about your men's basketball team that's come off to a rocket-hot start, 7-0. They play two games back-to-back Saturday and Sunday. Well, not, let me rephrase that. They play Saturday, and then they play Sunday. But at any time that you're having to play two games in two nights, it's kind of difficult.
Well, it's not only two games in two nights, but this will be our fifth game tomorrow in 9 days. So we've racked up quite a few of them, and, you know, we went to the preseason tournament. This is the third annual preseason Mondak tournament held in Newtown. We did not have it last year, it being the COVID year, and we've never won it. And the same thing on the women's side. And so that weekend for both our women's Wildcat basketball program, our men's basketball program, to both walk away at the championship, that's never happened within the Mondak Conference. So it was a great weekend. It's the same weekend that our women's volleyball team won the district tournament, too. So it was a great weekend for Wildcat athletics.
Did you treat yourself as the athletic director and the head coach, get some ice cream cake or something? No?
You Nothing? Know what? I need to eat less treats, not more.
Ah, you're no fun. So let's talk about, I want to get into the nitty-gritty of the season so far, but you mentioned playing so many games and so few nights. What is the, like, health look like for that? Like, what do you have to do coming into the season, knowing when you look at your schedule, like, hey, this front part of our schedule is going to kind of be condensed. How do you make sure your players are prepared for that?
Well, you know, we've practiced almost every day, but we've had practices that have been 45 minutes long. Mm-hmm. It's just more of a, you know, just run just a little bit, get some shots up and get them loose, get some stretching in. We've gone into the pool some days and just to try to stay, you know, somewhat loose, and their bodies are ready to go. So you're racking out so many games, you can't get practices in. You know, and sometimes that's a little bit of a concern that you're not, you know, developing that way. Your development is all game development, and sometimes you start developing some habits that are not always great. So maybe watching a little bit more film and seeing what we're doing and seeing what we can correct, being off from our feet.
I've been watching a little bit of film. I've gotten to see a couple of the games on your stream, which is, I think it's stream free for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Or am I coming through here with some secret
when it works,
backwards?
Yes, yeah. It is.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it because not only I've been in the stands a couple times now at your arena, but it's nice to just put it on and then I can watch it on my laptop and do other things too. So it's nice. It's nice for the community, nice for the fans, not to have to be in the bleachers.
Sure.
So let's talk about the players on this team, Coach. When you came into this year, we mentioned a little bit in the pre-show, we were talking about, hey, college basketball is weird. Because at the very top, the Power 5 schools, the Dukes and the Kentuckys, they've got to redo their roster every single year. And at our level, you have to almost redo your roster every year. It's a 70-30 split between guys that stay and guys that end up moving on. So when you came into this year, what did your roster breakdown look like?
You know, we're closer to the 50% scenario this year, but that's not a typical year. So if you're bringing 50% of your roster back, that's a really good year in two-year college athletics. So we felt pretty good about things. You know, Kahari Broadway was the MVP of the Mondak Conference last year, and then Jaquan Sanders was a first-team all-region player. So to bring two back in the top seven of the league was tremendous. Adding Micah Swau from Rapid City Central High School, he's just been a terror. The kid works so hard. I tell you what, when you combine a high level of athleticism with an unbelievable work ethic, it's scary to watch him. He was actually named the MVP at the preseason tournament in Newtown, and he's just been a terrific addition to our program. Connor Hollenbeck from the same state, from South Dakota, from Rapid City, has been a tremendous player for us. At a four spot, he's shooting the ball a little bit better. Always been a terrific rebounder. Great culture kid, does everything right. Coach's kid, his dad's the head coach of Rapid City, Stevens High School. So he's a tremendous returner for us. And then in addition to Noah Christensen, you got two high character guys at the four and the five that mesh really well. And our chemistry has been really good. And then you add Logan Jidwabny as a returner, who's a great shooter, and Rashawn Parker, who's a tremendous shooter for us. We have great guard play. We have shooters. We have athletes that can defend, and our bigs are pretty darn good, too, and they have great chemistry, and they rebound the ball at a very high clip. So our strength, like we talked about, has been our depth.
So you sounds like you're checking all the boxes.
We got a lot of boxes checked, yes.
So what keeps you up at night?
You know what? A little bit of everything. Just to make sure we're always doing right. We're keeping our nose clean. And we're making good decisions on and off the floor. The health of our students, that they're all taking care of their business in the classroom. The graduation piece with our sophomores. And, you know, there's a ton of moving parts. You're always continually recruiting at the two-year college level because you need to bring in half to 70% of your roster every year. You're trying to develop the kids within your program. And then you're trying to move them on and market them to other programs. So there's a lot of things always going on at the two-year college level.
Let me ask you, because I always thought that was very interesting, is not only the head coach of the men's basketball team, but also as the athletic director. What does that look like when you're trying to market a player to other programs?
Well, you know what? Get good assistants. because my assistants do a tremendous job. And Brad Shaw's in her second year for us, and Rylan Pryor is in his first year. Gotch, a former player who works just down the street here at Verizon, he's helped out also, and we keep those guys busy. And I tell them that some days you almost need just to run the program like it's your own until I get there. And because the AD piece is demanding.
There's a lot of things going on,
you know, and we're expanding. We went from five sports to six sports, and within that, there's a lot more to manage, a little bit more in the eligibility standpoint, and a lot more paperwork as far as transfers and some things like that. So there's a lot of work to do within it. But in my older years now, that's not always so bad to have some of those responsibilities off the floor and trust your assistants. Because you know what? We're developing those young men too. The assistant coaches within your program, you know, they're getting quality experience, hands-on experience within our program. And those guys being able to run the show is not only good for our program, but it's good for them.
Coach, you don't look a day over 35. What are you talking about?
Approaching 60.
Let's talk about the games coming up. You got Miles Community College today at 4 p.m. Is that correct?
Women at 2, men at 4.
What do you know about your opponent?
Well, they have a couple of really good bigs. And Chase Tate, their head coach, has been around a long time. He does a terrific job. I think they have a lot of newcomers. So that's been an advantage for us. And that advantage showed in the preseason tournament but for both our men and our women. But he's going to figure it out at some point in time. They haven't got off to a stellar start, so their record isn't great. That's the same way they kind of were last year to a certain degree. But you just kind of know when you have the right people in charge of the program, at a certain point in time, the light's going to come on. They're going to figure out just how they need to play. I joked a little bit with our guys. My mentor once told me, sometimes you don't want to play a not very good team too early because you want to give them more time to figure out they're not very good. I always thought that was kind of funny. But sometimes when that happens and teams experience some losses, if they're under good leadership, that the kids will start to be a little bit more coachable and, okay, what do we need to do now to really put this thing together? Sometimes at the two-year college level and you're thinking a lot of newcomers, everybody comes in with their own agenda and their own plan. Oh, I'm going to do this. And then finally they figure out, wow, this isn't quite going. And at what point in time are they going to put that package together? And Chase has been able to do that with Miles. So I hope it's not today, but eventually I think they're going to get going.
You said a lot of interesting things there. I'm going to capitalize on one of them. It was the bad teams don't know that they're bad early, right? I like that. What about good teams? Because you have a good team. You're undefeated. What do you do when you start off undefeated when you don't have a ton of, what would you say that you've had a lot of hardship so far this season, seven games in?
Good teams are teams with a lot of returns. You're worried that you might get a little bit too complacent early. So mm-hmm. you try to challenge them and set up some really good scrimmage games, and we did that. I think we went 500 in some of our scrimmages, and we went out and scrimmaged Jamestown University on the road, and that's a four-year program, and those are programs that we've been able to compete with in the past sometimes, but they had a tremendous amount of returners within their program, and boy, they're running four-year offense, and you better be ready to defend, and we were not yet. We were hitting every single screen, I use the analogy of Ben Stiller and Along Came Polly when he's playing open gym, and he put his chest right into the man with no shirt on and a big old hairy chest with sweat. Do you remember that
clip? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he just hit it right on his face. And that's my analogy when we run into a screen and don't know that it's coming. You pulled the Ben Stiller. And we had a lot of Ben Stillers in that Jamestown University scrimmage.
So the other thing I wanted to capitalize on, because you mentioned there's a lot of programs that are young. Guys come in. They have their own agenda. How do you get everybody on the same page and everybody's on the same agenda when you got guys coming in and coming out? Like this year, you mentioned you got a lot of returners, so that helps. But in a year where you don't have a lot of returners, as the head coach, how do you sit everybody down and say, hey, this is the game plan. Take everything else, throw it out. If we run our game plan, if we do my plan, everybody will succeed.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think what we have done is we've tried to start our best defensive guys. So we're trying to develop a culture. And you're coming in the junior college level. It's not about what points you put up. We're going to put the five guys on the floor to start the game, which are our five best defensive players. And then start to manage and rotate in your offensive guys off the bench just a little bit. And sometimes they're both. And in this case, this year, we have a handful of them that maybe are both. But at least you're selling something to your guys. If you're not defending, at a high level, it's going to be hard to etch into the top rotation within our program. That and then use a lot of data. We talk about rebounds as rebounds per minute, not total rebounds per game. And if you're a heck of a rebounder, you're pulling down a rebounder every two, three, maximum of 4 minutes on the floor. And if you're showing me you're getting a rebound every 7 or 8 minutes, you're not a very good rebounder. So it's not about how many minutes you play in the game. It's about what you're getting done when you play those minutes. And you start to collect that data and show them that. And they're like, wow, Noah Christensen's pulling down a board almost a little bit under every 3 minutes on the floor. That's a tremendous number. People don't think he's always getting that much done offensively. He's still trying to find himself just a little bit and find his fit within our program. But he's actually doing a terrific job defensively and on the glass. And we try to recognize those things. And that, in turn, motivates our student athletes at the same time.
Were you good at math in school, Coach?
No, but my family members are, so somewhere it's in me, but somewhere. I can't say that I was any genius in the classroom mathematically.
I think it's funny that because you mentioned the data, and I wasn't very good at math either. But if you throw me a box score, you throw me a baseball box score, you throw me an NBA box, I got it. I'm all right, on, and right. I think that a lot of us jocks, we didn't do well in the classroom, but now you give us the advanced data, you give us the rebounds per minute, and we get it, you know?
Mm-hmm. We also use shots per minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your shots per minute are really high and your percentages are low, well, your playing minutes are probably going to go down a little bit. You know, your shot performance aren't quite so high, but your percentages are really good from the floor. Wow, we might need to be doing a little bit more for you to get you some more minutes on the floor or try to run some things for you. So that's part of the scenario, too, because sometimes you'll have individuals come off the bench and they think, boy, I got to make up for missed time, and they'll go, you know, take five shots in 5 minutes of play, and it won't always go so well for them. So, you know, we use some of that data, too.
So you have a game tonight at 4:00. You have a game tomorrow. What goes into that? How do you game plan 2 games in 2 days?
You know, when McDermott was at Wayne State, he talked about in the NSIC. He talked about on Tuesday when they come back to practice, they game plan for Saturday's opponent. They're Friday, Saturday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, they game plan for Wednesday. I don't know that we're quite that smart. We try to game plan for the first one, then figure out the second day. Just through walk-ons and some walk-throughs and some conversations. But I think you develop a system of how you're going to play. Ours is, you know, a lot of man-to-man, and if we don't like our matchups man-to-man, we go to our matchup zone. And our matchup zone is not stand up and wave your hands around and say, I hope you miss. You know, we're getting after people, and we're forcing some transition, and we do some things that way. So I think within how we play, we always have something ready for playing different types of teams.
There you go. Now, before I let you go, head coach of the NDSCS Wildcats men's basketball team and the athletic director, tell me something smart. Give me something that I don't know right now about your program.
Well, you know we're 7-0. We know we won the tournament. You know we play the next 2 days. We've played 5 games in 9 days. What you don't know about our program, you probably know about everything I know about the program right now. It's a top 15 winningest program in the country, NJCAA Division I. How about that?
There we go. Head coach of the NDSCS Wildcats. You're listening to the Giants Sports Show on KBMW.
And now, back to the Giants Sports Show with Andrew Zimmel on the Voice of the Valley, AM 1450 KBMW.
Welcome back to the Giants Sports Show. It's Andrew Zimmel hanging out with you on a Saturday morning. We have the voice of the North Dakota State Bison, Jeff Calhane, on the line with us. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Andrew. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course. I had to get you on at some point this season, and I thought what better day to do it than the last home game for the Bison.
Yeah, it's a pretty special day, right? I mean, there's a lot on the line. It's Senior Day. It's the Harvest Bowl, which is obviously a big deal to all of our folks in the field, the men and women in the field around the state. So a ton to celebrate and a ton to play for as well, with postseason and an outright conference championship on the line.
Now, Jeff, explain to me, because I saw that they had won their 10th conference championship last week against Youngstown. How did that – what are you talking about, an outright championship today? What does that mean?
Yeah, Andrew, it means that essentially no one has the same record in the conference. And so you look at it, and right now NDSU is sitting here at 9-1, 6-1 in the Valley, where no one can pass them. No one can outright win the conference championship ahead of them at this point. And there are two other teams currently, USD and Southern Illinois, who both are 5-2 in the league. If USD were to beat NDSU today in Fargo, they would clinch a share of a conference championship because they would also have a 6-2 record. Same for Southern Illinois if they win their final game of the year later on today as well. So a Bison win, they finish the season 7-1 in the Valley. and win an outright conference title because no one can catch him in the loss column.
There you go. I'm glad you explained that for some of us that aren't good at math, Jeff. That was why I was asking. I was kind of confused. I was losing count on my fingers. All right, so let's talk about this season as a whole so far, coming into this last game, because there have been some weeks, Jeff, that I look at the Bison and I say, that is the best team in FCS, and there's some weeks that I say, oh, is this team going to be playing in the semifinals? I don't know if they're going to get that far. Has it felt that way for you as the voice of the team, that you're with this team all the time? Has it felt like it's been one continuous journey, or is it a little bit of a roller coaster for you too?
No, I wouldn't call it a roller coaster. I mean, I think every year you're going to have your own unique ups and downs, and I think one thing that's happened around the Valley and around the FCS is that, you know, teams are tired of getting beaten by NDSU. So what happens? Well, they do something about it. They go out, they get better players. Obviously, with the new legislation in place in college athletics, the transfer portal allows you to bring in, you know, transfers easier and quicker than what has been happened in years past. And so, you know, I think that with some of those things, and you also factor in that everyone returns all of their players from the spring with a COVID year. So you got a lot of veteran football teams out there around the Valley that have experienced playing this level of competition. And so that's truly a unique setting and situation this fall in the world of college football. So I wouldn't call it a roller coaster. You're going to go through ups and downs through every season. I was just looking at some of the past years of NDSU football, and you know, going back through, there have been some great teams that have lost games or have struggled in games that they've won during a season. It's just the tenor of a year, and certainly we've seen some of that around this season with the Bison. Yet still, all their goals are out in front of them today, with a great opportunity and a chance to be a top two seed in the playoffs, which would mean home field advantage.
Jeff, I've been talking about this team all year, saying that I feel like this is an OG, like an original feel for the Bison, that this is a defensive-first team that's really run-heavy, and that Quincy Patterson is the type of quarterback that can run that type of offense. More of a game manager than a, you know, big-arm threat, but he's got the ability to run with his legs. What have you liked out of the transfer from Virginia Tech under center for the Bison?
Yeah, you know, he's had a year where he came in late December, early January. It was around the team and was learning the offense, was basically learning a new language. And physically, he's extremely gifted. He can throw the deep ball with the best of them. He's got NFL caliber arm strength. And he has come in, and during the first seven games of the year, obviously, provided a really, really good start for this Bison offense. Unfortunately, in that Missouri State game, he took a pop, injured the shoulder, and he wasn't performing and executing at the level the staff and really, frankly, his teammates needed him to in that game. And therefore, that's why you saw the change with Cam Miller coming in. And Cam has done a great job, you know, with this opportunity and helping lead this team to more victories and a chance to win another conference championship, as we've talked about. But Quincy came in and did a fantastic job leading this team to a 7-0 record. And, you know, he's getting back close to 100% health right now. And he's throwing the ball in practice. And it's still zipping out of his hands like it was earlier in the year. And so he came in and really provided a nice spark and a great start for this football team to start the season.
The reason I ask that is because you would assume that he's going to be fully healthy for the playoffs, and he's probably going to be the QB1 going into the playoffs, right, Jeff?
I don't know.
That's really?
A great question, Andrew. Right now, the way Cam Miller is playing, 70% completion percentage, how this offense looked and ran last weekend versus Youngstown State, I would think right now the starter is Cam Miller. And that could obviously change if today we see an offense that has a tough time moving the football against a much-improved USD defense, one of the top 15 rushing defenses and one of the top 15 overall defenses in all of FCS college football. But, Andrew, I would say right now Cam Miller is your guy unless, you know, something derails or you see a lack of efficiency here today and maybe in that first playoff game coming up in 2 weeks.
That's incredible to me because I thought Cam I thought he was a good spark. I was not going to be considering it was QB1. I thought this was Quincy's job to lose. But if you're telling, hey, I'm going to take your word for it, Jeff, going forward here, that is impressive news. See, again, that's impressive news to me. I did not think that.
Well, I think a big part of it's Cam Miller. And, yeah. You know, Cam has come in, and he has been able to, I think, with the way Tyler Rohl and this offense has run in the running game, I think Cam has been more efficient in the intermediary passing game where it's 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, and able to pick up some third downs and some passing plays in that part of the offense. I think we've seen maybe a little bit more of a crispness with this offense, Andrew, a little bit more continuity, I guess, a little bit more rhythm offensively than maybe what we saw earlier on with Quincy. So, again, it's all pretty fluid, I think, as you move into the playoffs. Cam certainly needs to continue to play well and needs to play well today. But if you see this NDSU offense firing in all cylinders, it's Cam Miller at quarterback.
So I want to get your take on this too, Jeff. It seems like all of the big roadblocks outside of the conference are leaving to FBS level. JMU, Sam Houston State, all these teams are moving up. What does that do for NDSU?
Well, it's definitely a hit to the division. I mean, you can't argue that. Losing James Madison is certainly a big deal. You know, losing Sam Houston, I don't know if that affects Bison fans as much as it does the division, but it certainly affects the FCS. How does it directly impact NDSU? You know, I think before those schools left for the FBS, I think the Bison and their administration, Matt Larson, Todd Phelps, and some of those folks had really started to dig in on what it would take to make the move up. And over the last year with COVID, when there was no football in the fall and, you know, less events and less sporting events and things going on around campus, I think that's when these folks took the time to kind of look at it and say, all right, what if we're going to do it, you know, how it would look, what it would be like from a financial perspective, on and on and on and on. So many scenarios that are out there that you have to account for. And so this group started working at it, and I can tell you they have been locked in on this thing behind the scenes, and they don't talk a lot about it publicly. That's not Matt Larson's style, but the work has been done. They've crossed the T's, they've dotted the I's. And so I don't know. I think the next step here, Andrew, is what's going to happen with the college football playoff. Will it expand? When will it expand overall? And then there are certainly some things where, you know, there's going to be a new president at NDSU that is a massive part of this that not many people talk about. And you've got some other things that you have to certainly get your ducks in a row with as well. But, look, they're looking at it. They're looking at the move to see if it does make sense. Losing those two schools is a hit to the division. There's no doubt about that. And so the next, you know, probably 6 to 12 months to 18 months could be very fascinating and interesting on the conference realignment front.
See, because when I saw that the move for the teams that are outside the Missouri Valley Football Conference, these teams moving up, I said, well, now the winner of the conference is going to be the champion at this point. You know, the outside struggles aren't going to be there. And the title, to me, Jeff, doesn't mean as much. I understand that winning is great, but if you're not beating the best competition, what does it really mean? And if the best competition's in your conference, well, then the conference championship's what you're really gunning for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but you really can't control any of that,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you go play the games, you play who they put in front of you, and if it's in the first round of the playoffs or down in Frisco, you go and win the game. And so there's nothing that you can control from that standpoint from NDSU's perspective. I mean, and I think the other thing that will happen is we've seen this, you know, this is nothing new, Andrew, this you know, realignment of some of the top teams in the FCS moving up to the FBS. This has been going on for, you know, 25 years. So you've seen the Appalachian States, the Coastal Carolinas, the Georgia Southerns all move up. And, you know, the FCS has been able to find some programs that have risen up and have kind of taken the place of some of these other schools. James Madison was not a great program prior to the 2016 year when they won a national championship in Mike Houston's first season. I mean, they were a known program, but they certainly had not been a program that was a world beater year in and year out. So I think some teams that we know of and are not on the national radar right now, I think some of those schools will rise up outside of the Valley and make for some interesting storylines. But yeah, in the present right now, it doesn't make a great look when you lose those types of schools on the outside.
Let's talk about the game today in the Fargo Dome, the senior night, or senior day, I should say, for the Bison. What are you looking forward to in this game, Jeff?
Big game, a lot of emotion. As you laid out, senior day, the Harvest Bowl. USD is having their best season, I would say, in their Division I era. Certainly have their best defense, and it's not even close. They're a team that's come up. They've risen up off the radar. They were picked 8th of 11 in the Valley preseason poll, and here they are with a chance to win a share of a conference championship at the Fargo Dome this afternoon. I see strength on strength. NDSU wants to be physical and run the football. They have the second-best rushing offense in the nation, and USD has taken a page out of what NDSU and SDSU have done defensively, mainly NDSU. They have made it a priority to be physical and stop the run. And they've done that. They've been a tremendous rush defense this year. They slowed Pierre Strong down early in the game last week against SDSU. So strength on strength. NDSU running it, USD stopping the run. If the Bison are capable and running the football today and have a lot of success there, should be a big day for NDSU.
I think any time that they can run the ball, they're going to win the game, Jeff. I think it's going to come down to our guy, Cam Miller. You know, if he can make some plays in that secondary, because how does South Dakota's secondary look? Because when I've done all of my research, I saw run defense. I didn't see a lot of passing teams that they've faced this year.
Yeah, they're actually pretty banged up,
yeah,
to be honest with you. They're down a couple of safeties. They're down a couple of corners. So they are stretching their depth pretty thin. There's no doubt about it. And so, yeah, I think you're right. To your point, play-action passing from Cam Miller is going to be big. Being able to convert on a third and medium, a third and, you know, seven is going to be important with him throwing the football. And if he's able to do that, it's going to open some things up in the running game as well. But, look, I know Tyler Roll. He wants to be the most physical group on the field, and so he doesn't care where you're ranked as a rushing defense. He expects the offensive line, the Rams, and the crew chiefs, the tight ends and fullbacks to impose their will. And they've got a bigger back now that's emerged. It's Merrick Williams, who has had a really good season. The SMU transfer, and is coming off of a career day at Youngstown State that is not a fun guy to tackle over four quarters. So I think Tyler Roll has kind of hit his sweet spot here with his rushing game, and he's going to do whatever he can to try and dent that defensive front and wear down USD in this one.
Voice of the Bison, Jeff Calhoun on KBMW. Jeff, we should have done this earlier. I apologize. This has been a lot of fun, and good luck today calling the game.
Great. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. More of the Giant Sports Show coming up on KBMW 1450, the voice of the Valley, head volleyball coach Margaret Wilson coming up talking to us about Breckenridge volleyball, recapping her season. We'll be back with more Giant Sports Show next.
And now, back to the Giant Sports Show with Andrew Zimmel on the voice of the Valley, AM 1450 KBMW.
And making a return after a, I would say, pretty successful state tournament. It's head coach of the Breckenridge Volleyball Cowgirls, Margaret Wilson. Margaret, how you feeling today?
Good morning. I'm feeling good. How are you?
We're doing good over here. Things are going well. Let's recap the season. Let's recap the state tournament. You guys went down there and faced who in the first round?
Yep. We went and took on the number 4 ranked team, Bethel Academy, and heard a lot of good stuff about them. Their strong hitters kind of put the ball where teams weren't. One of our opponents actually got a hold of us and kind of gave us a rundown of what to expect. So went down there kind of knowing, like, all right, we got to play good defense type of deal, and we need to serve strong so we keep them out of system. And they tipped around our block and just kind of picked our defense apart. So definitely a different style of play than what we had just played in playoffs with Henning and BBE. Not real hard swings, more of the tipping game and putting the ball in different places and making our players run after things. So it kind of caught us off guard.
Now, you faced them, and I saw almost like surgery precision. That's something that we didn't see all season long from any other team, the ability to just put the ball where you guys weren't.
Right. And that takes a really talented hitter to be able to see the defense like that, and you don't see that very often in a high school player. When we played Pequot Lakes in that Fergus tournament earlier in the season, one of their hitters could do that to us, and, I mean, you just control the game then. And, you know, it's frustrating because it's a tip. You know, why can't we pick up a tip? And our players are like, why can't I get that? You know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, plays with our head a little bit and catches us off guard. And it's hard to block a tip, especially when they're able to, you know, put it where we are. So definitely it was a hard game in that sense, just for our defensive play.
How did that help you as a coach and your team grow? Like, for the girls that are coming back, how are you going to be able to look back in that game and say, like, okay, we can take this good thing from it, this good thing from it, or is there no good things coming from that game?
Well, it's something that, you know, it's really exciting to get a really hard hit kill, right? But it still scores a point when you can put the ball where the team's not, you know? So it's a tool that hitters that might be not as strong as other hitters could use, you know, to still score. And so definitely something to keep in the toolbox. I don't want to resort to a tipping team, though. I want to still, you know, train our hitters to swing strong, be able to put the ball, or not put the ball, but hit the ball in different spots to avoid a block, but not just resort to a tipping game. So I think it's important to be able to do both. So going forward, I guess, what are we going to take from that? Actually, what we took from that match was, like, we are not coming to the state tournament and getting 0-2'd out of this tournament, right? We're going to come back, and we're going to win a game because we're not coming down here to just be here, that kind of thing. So I thought our turnaround and our mindset change and our confidence level really improved after that first game going into the second game.
That's what I was going to ask you. How did you rally your troops, or did you not even have to? Did the seniors do it for you? How'd that work?
Oh, for sure. The seniors kind of took charge, and that's what they talked about. The conversation in the locker room was, we're ready to go, and we're not afraid of anything or nervous, kind of that deal. We're not going to let these big lights and big stadium mess with us, right? We're going to go out and play our game. So definitely a little more focused than just going in and kind of like, what happens. Which is kind of how I thought the first match went. So compared to the second match, it was definitely a refocused mindset.
That's what I was going to say. So let's shift it over to Friday. That was the one match at state, the first time the Breckenridge Cowgirls have won a state tournament game in how long? I think it was 40 years since you've been there. How long was it since you won one? It was 40 years, right?
Yeah, 1980, they took second at state, I believe. So, yeah, 41 years.
Well, you know, good to get that monkey off your back then. Get the cobwebs off of the wins.
Right. Yeah, that was a good win. We played really confident, really strong. We played Southridge, which was an unranked seed going into the tournament. So maybe that gave us a little bit of confidence. But I think overall, this is the mindset was like, we're not here to lose and go home. You know, we're here to win a game. So we got something to prove type of deal.
Well, that's good. You guys played really well. What, won three in three sets, correct?
Yep, that one won three, yep.
Went three sets, ended up playing on Saturday at the 9 a.m. Consolation Bracket Championship game, and that one went a little bit wonky on you. Kind of got away from you a little bit in the third set, am I correct?
Yeah, we play Legacy Academy, one really, really strong hitter, similar to BBE. We battled back in the first set. I ended up winning that one 26-24, which could have really easily went their way. You know, we were down, I think it was 21-24, and battled back for that one. So had a little bit of confidence going into the second set. We led the second set till about .10, and then they caught up, and then we got stuck in a serve receive. Kind of couldn't find our way out of it. And then it was like the end of the season face showed up. Like, oh, no, if we don't, not that we were going to play anymore, but kind of the thought that this is the last day anybody in Minnesota can play competitive volleyball, and this is the end of our season, and this is our last match, and it was a little bit terrified. Like, we were running around, like, trying to help each other out, but couldn't quite, you know, just make that spark and ignite it. And it was, I think our nerves got to us and the emotions of the day. And, I mean, we played hard. We really did. But things just weren't happening like they had been in past competitive games like that. So it was a definitely a tough loss. But, I mean, to finish out the season like we did, it's definitely something to be proud of. So going forward, I think there's a lot of expectations out of the Cowgirl Volleyball program and out of our players themselves. You know, we've done this, we've been here, and I think we can get here again type of deal mindset. So looking forward to the season, but wow, we really accomplished a lot this season.
What's the one thing you're going to take away, Coach?
From the whole season?
From the whole season, yeah.
Well, we don't need a conditioning. But conditioning is not always a bad thing. You know, we went a lot of five set matches, especially versus Henning. Both of the matches that we went against them were very physically exhausting because it was long volleys, really good defensive play on both sides of the net. So it was who could outlast who type of deal. So I know my players hate the conditioning that we do, and they say it every year. But I think it's an important part of the game, right? It's a mental part of the game as well as physically. And then going forward, like, the high expectations type of thing. Like, our players need to expect it out of themselves. Coaching staff expects it out of them, you know. And now our community is really keeping an eye on Cowgirl Volleyball. Just after the state tournament and coming home and, you know, seeing people in public, you know, a lot of parents, actually three or four parents of elementary students, they're like, oh, my daughter, we had to go buy a volleyball. We're playing volleyball in the house, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's really, really nice to hear. And so it's we're growing, right? We're growing into a volleyball community, and I don't want it to just stop because next season maybe we aren't as successful, right? We have to have that same mindset that we're a good team. We have made a name for ourselves this season, and we need to hold that accountability to ourselves. So it's exciting. It's an exciting feeling. I'm feeling a loss, though, a little bit. You know, a season all of a sudden comes to an end, and it's like, huh, well, now what do? You know what I mean? So I don't get to see those girls every day, you know, and we played, you know, 90 days of volleyball, like a full season start to finish, which is something not a lot of teams get to do very often. So it was a full, complete season, but definitely feeling a loss. I mean, our seniors, all eight of them, I can just run down. I mean, Carsey and Sophie, as our setters, they've been setting for 2 years, Carsey for 3 years. You know, we got to fill those positions next year. Our middles, Lauren, Byron, Anna Erickson, you know, stepped up huge this year. Anna, especially with her swing and her block. Lauren added a nice block for us and then a good swings as well, especially towards the end of the season. So definitely going to miss those two. We have Tori and them on the right side, who's been playing right side for two seasons. You know, she developed into a huge block for us on that side, and that's kind of her role. You know, she used to play middle as a freshman, sophomore. I moved her to the right side because we needed a big, strong block on that side, and she really stepped up for us. So she's going to be a hole over there. Morgan Bruns also played a lot of right side, too, and she had a very strong swing. So we'll miss her as well. And Cameron Kaler, she was my outside for four seasons. So she's going to be a big hole to fill, especially since she's been in that position so long. You know, teams know who she is. So knowing that she's not there might be an advantage for other teams, you know, in their minds. But and then our biggest one, Riley Finkrell in the back row. She's going to be hard to replace. She's been a solid defensive leader for three seasons, and the talker on the team, the captain, you know, she's a great teammate. So she's going to be a really hard one to replace. I hope I didn't miss anybody.
I don't think you did. I think you hit everybody, Coach.
Did I?
I think so.
There's a lot of them to think about. I know. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy that they're all going to be graduating.
Well, and I'll privy you to some information, not information, but conversations I've had, and it's been a lot of the, well, you know, they had a really good season this year, and, you know, they might do good yet last year. Hey, I'm telling you right now, and I'm letting all the listeners know as well, the expectation now is success. It's not a, oh, it was nice that we went for the first time in 40 years, and now we'll wait 40 more. It's a, hey, this is a good team, and they're going to continue to be a good team, and they're going to find a way to get back here next year. That is, for me, that's the mindset that I have as a Breckenridge, Wahpeton guy who's, you know, talking about these teams all the time. I don't like to hear that, well, you know, they had a good season this year. Well, they might do something next. No, they had a good season this year, and they're going to do something next year.
Right, yeah. And that's what our players need to expect out of themselves. You know, they kind of got to tune out the outside noise, and, you know, we need to buy into that we can be successful again next year, you know. The senior leadership that we had this year can tie into what we had next year, you know. A lot of our – the rest of our varsity squad was filled with juniors, who was really good playing experience on the varsity team. But the rest of them were part of the whole program for the full season as well, you know. So they practiced with us for everything. They were on the bench cheering everybody on. So they played a crucial role in it all too. And then going forward, you know, they have to expect that out of themselves as much as we expect it out of them too. So, you know, they know what it takes to get there. And I think just that having been a part of it will definitely help out for when we come to next season.
Coach Margaret Wilson, it's been a pleasure to talk to you these past couple weeks, and I'm looking forward to talking to you at the beginning of next season.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate all your coverage this year, and thanks for coming to state with us. That was awesome.
Of course. Somebody's got to do it. Margaret Wilson, yeah. The head coach of the Breckenridge Cowgirls. You've been listening to the Giants Sports Show on KBMW 1450 for Andrew Zimmel and our unofficial producer, Big Mike. I want to thank you guys for hanging out with us this Saturday morning, as well as all of the great coaches who were able to swing by for us. And hopefully we can get a couple more of those coaches to come by. Basketball season is heating up. We're going to have basketball tune-ups coming. I heard that Monday is the first official day, November 22nd, first official day to start practicing in Wahpeton. So, you know, I'm probably going to be out there getting in the head coaches of these guys' ears, trying to bring them in. Thank you so much for listening, and more great country music coming your way on The Voice of the Valley, KBMW.